Okay, let us begin. Perek Chaf Gimel is where we are up to.
I parked in your parking, is that okay?
It's fine
because
I'm
in the next one.
I've moved over one.
In
shul, you have to sit in the right seat.
That's right. All right, Perek Chaf Gimel. I assume people know that if they miss a class, then there is a recording of it on the shul website that you can download. Excuse me?
You're here next week.
I am here next week.
It's the week after.
Because he doesn't want to split back and forth.
You'll tell everybody next.
So we can have it open to each.
Yeah, you're welcome to
split back and forth.
That's right.
Giving you information. You're
supposed to
answer many questions.
Vayehi. Vayehi. Miyamim rabim. Acharei asher iniach Hashem liyisrael.
23.
Perek Chaf Gimel. Chapter
23.
These are
the people that we're talking.
Sefer Yehoshua.
I got the right page.
Let's do this again.
I think that's a good idea.
Vayehi miyamim rabim, acharei asher iniach Hashem liyisrael, mikol oyvehem misavim. Many days or many years after God had given Israel respite from all of her enemies surrounding her. Yeshua zaken ba bayamim. Yeshua is now an old man. That's a very interesting introduction to a parak. Either ominous or almost like tagged on epilogue, postscript. Stories over and now. Vayehi amim rabim. Many days later, many years later, we're now focused on something else completely. So we are embarking on a new topic or a new part of the story. Yeah.
It says in the Torah, Moshe Zaken, he talks about, but is it often used, Zaken, to describe people? It is often regularly used?
Abraham is described as Zaken, Baba Yamim.
Right.
Yaakov is Zaken, but yeah.
Someone was saying to me that only Moshe is Zaken, and that the word Zaken is not used often. It's very sparingly.
Just had it. Vayiki zaken Yitzchak, Pashas told us, and in Chayesara, Vavraham zaken ba bayamim, Vashem bevachat Avraham bakol. Oh, so that's not uncommon. Avraham zaken baba yamim. That's not uncommon. That's almost like a phrase that rolls off the tongue. Zaken baba yamim. Old man. Part of it is that the word zaken can mean an elder in the context of a leader. This kenim of the society or the elders. It can be an official position to be part of this kenim, like Moshe, who goes collecting all of this kenim before he goes to Moshe to Paro. There is a notion of the Zekenim as a group of leaders. We're going to see it actually in Pasuk Bet. Vayikra Yehoshua l'chol Yisrael l'zkenav u'levashav. Yeshua calls over all of the heads and elders. So there is a notion that the word Zaken has two meanings. It can mean somebody who's old, and it can mean the elders, or the elder, in its context of leadership and wisdom. That's where Chazal get the acronym that Zaken means that's where Chazal have the drasha that the word Zaken is the Rashi Tevot of Ze Shekana Chochma, the one who has acquired wisdom. Acquired wisdom through years, through experience, and through their stature, and through Torah learning. Therefore, this zakenim is often used by Chazal to talk about somebody who's a Talmid Chacham as a zaken. It doesn't have to be a function of age. Baba Yamim is only a function of age. So it could be that the Torah's terminology of zaken Baba Yamim is there because the word zaken can also be used in Tanakh, in Chumash, in the context of the zkenim, who aren't necessarily a function of age. So when it is a function of age, the Torah may add that emphasis to zaken babayamim.
But this setting is just like Moshe. I mean, it's
absolutely
it's a parallel.
It's exactly the same setting as Moshe, and that's exactly the analogy that I want to jump to, and that's why you've got a Chumash, because we're going to see a whole bunch of parallels to the setting of Moshe. Moshe's final days before he leaves us, the end of his life, the end of 40 years in the desert, gets the people together and he gives them a great long speech, shmooze. And that's exactly what Yeshua does, and the model is not surprising given the fact that Yeshua has always been depicted as Moshe's servant, Moshe's right-hand man. If you remember back to the opening parak of Yeshua. Anybody remember learning the opening parak of Yeshua?
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's right. That was when we were in Epstein. And we talked about the fact that Sefer Yeshua begins with the phrase Yeshua Yachare mot Moshe Eved Hashem Vayom Hashem al Yehoshua ben Nun Misharet Moshe. The opening verse of Yeshua sets the stage. Moshe Eved Hashem dies. Yehoshua is Misharet Moshe. He is Moshe's servant, Moshe's shamash, Moshe's assistant. That's how the book opens, and much of the opening stories of Yehoshua are to trace the parallel between Moshe's leadership and Yehoshua's leadership. That's not an accident. Yehoshua certainly digresses to his own agenda and his own style of leadership, and at the end of his life, he's going to come back to the model of Moshe again. So it almost brackets Yehoshua's life at both ends with the sort of the identification with Moshe. That certainly wouldn't be an accident. That's very intentional. It's critical for the second generation leadership to be seen as the continuity of the first generation of leadership. My grandfather, Zichron Levecha, once commented in a drasha that there's a fundamental difference between the second and the third generation in an evolution or in an embarking on a major change in direction. So the first generation can be a revolutionary. The second generation can't, because if the second generation is a revolutionary, if a second generation moves and changes direction, then what it does to the first generation is it isolates them as an episode in history. There's no sense that it created a long-standing chain of direction. So the second generation's role has to be to solidify the first, an indication that this is a continuous process. This is now a new process that continues from generation to generation. The third generation already can allow themselves the luxury of moving into new directions and new vistas because they've established the continuity in the chain. And the classic example of this is the relationship between Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Avram is the revolutionary. Yitzchak, by definition, has to be the continuity of Avraham. So Yitzchak's contribution to the cause has to be essentially almost a copy of everything Avraham did, including the digging of the wells, including the story of Rivka. His life will mirror that of Avraham. And in a sense, he can't, even if he wanted to, he really can't allow himself the luxury of veering off into a new direction. That's what the Maral talks about, the notion of Gevurah, as Yitzchak's character of Gevurah, not in the context of strength, but in the context of self-restraint. Because that's what Yitzchak's whole gestalt is. Yitzchak has to be the continuity from Abraham, the second generation, to make sure that Abraham is not an isolated moment in history, but that he's a chain, there's a continuity. Yaakov already is the third generation. Yaakov can move off into a new direction because Yaakov doesn't have to worry about establishing that chain or that connection. He's already a grandchild. So that sequence is important, and I think that's exactly the same sequence you have with Moshe and Yehoshua. When Yehoshua comes into the role of Moshe's disciple, Moshe's successor, it's vitally important that he be perceived and perceive himself as continuing the legacy and continuing the effort of Moshe himself. Post-Yehoshua then you can move off into different directions. And the type of leadership and the structure of leadership, Israel can afford it change in that context, but not that second generation. That second generation has to be anchored in the world of Moshe. So I think you see that pattern here as well. So it's not an accident, Adina, that the parak begins with a sense of Yeshua is old, so what does he do? He gathers all the elders of the people together. What does Moshe do at the end of his life? Gathers all the people together. And I'll show you linguistically, textually, the parallels are also very strikingly parallel. I'll show you that in a moment as well. Let me read through the whole parak, and then we're going to go through all the parallels, because there are a remarkable number of textual parallels between this parak and all kinds of other prakim in Chumash. But I'll do them systematically, but let's first get a sense of what the parak deals with. Again, many years after God had given them rest from all their enemies, meaning after the campaign, the military campaign had ended, we're now years later, Yeshua is old. Calls together all of the elders, the heads, the tribes, the shoftim, and the shotrim, the officers and the judges. He tells them, listen, I'm old. No dancing around. I am old. I am not going to be here for long. You have seen all that God has done to these nations. Because God is fighting you, has fought for you. Look how I have taken the land of these nations that are left, and I've divided them up amongst your tribes by the Goral. From the Yarden, through all the nations that we've conquered, and up until the great sea westward, Mevoa Shemesh. Mevoa Shemesh means, right? The Yam HaGadol is the Mediterranean, and Mevoa Shemesh is west. Right, that road is called Derech Mevoa Shemesh. Excellent, right? We talked about that last week. It's called Derech Mevoa Shemesh because it goes east to west, because the sun rises in the east and it sets in the west. Baha Shemesh means, Bi'at Shemesh is the Torah's term for sunset. Uvaha Shemesh v'taher. The sun will set and he will be purified. So there's a constant this week's parasha. Yitzei Yaakov mibe'eshava v'yela charana v'yifka b'makom v'yalen sham ki vaha Shemesh. Yaakov on his way goes to sleep because the sunset, ki vaha Shemesh. Mavoa Shemesh is the direction of Kiva Shemesh, meaning westward. Mavoa Shemesh is the direction in which the sun sets, which is west. Okay, let's continue. Vashem Elokechem, hu aman pasake. Vashem Elokechem, hu yedofem mipnechem. God will chase them away from you. V'horish otam milifnechem, he will allow you to inherit the land, meaning he will expel them for you. V'rishtem et artzam kasher diber Hashem Elokechem lechem, and you will inherit, you will take that land. V'chazaktem me'od lishmor v'lasot et kol hakatuv b'sefer Torat Moshe. Be strong, very strong, to guard all that is written in this Torah. L'vilti sur memenu yamin usmol, not to veer from it right or left. Livuti vo vagoyim ha'ela nisharim ha'ela itchem uveshem meloahem lotazgiru volotashbiu volota avdum volotishtachavulahem. Livuti vo vagoyim ha'ela nisharim ha'ela itchem means you shouldn't go with them, you shouldn't engage with these nations, you shouldn't become socially connected to these people. And don't mention their names, which is a prohibition against mentioning the name of an idolatrous deity.
because we don't know who it is.
Any of these nations.
But he's not specifying.
Any of these nations of Canaan. Any of these idolatrous nations. By the way, that is a halach in the Torah, that you're not allowed to mention the name of a deity of another, of an idolatrous religion. Becomes somewhat problematic in terms of casual use of the names of other deities and other religious systems, which is not an uncommon. You're not allowed to mention the names of their deities, nor may you swear by the names of their deities. Certainly not serve them. Not to bow down to them. You must cleave to Hashem your God. Kasher asitem ad yom hazeh, have you done till now? In other words, he's giving them a musar shmuz about what their future holds and how important it is for them, recognizing that Yeshua is not going to be there much longer. He's concerned about what their future is going to hold and how loyal their future they are going to be.
Has he decided that he's not going to be there much longer? Hashem has told him this? Or,
I
find that very
interesting. I think people know. Whether he's got another day or month or year. But Zakem Ba Bayamim, this is the third time in Sefer Yeshua it's told us that he's old. He's in his 100 plus. He dies at the age of 110. He's 100 plus.
But Yitzchak also thought he was dying and he lived another year.
Right.
That's true, but not, you know, Moshe is the is 120 and that's the max, and he's at 110 already. So I think Lev Yodea Marat Nafsho. You'd be surprised how people know when their time is coming.
Oh, really?
That profound truth. Vayoresh Hashem mipnechem goyim gdolim va'atzumim. God will dispel from this land for you great powerful nations. Vatem lo amad ish bifnechem ad hayom hazeh. Till this day, no nation has been able to stand up against you. You have been successful in every campaign. Ish echad mikem yirdof aleph, one of you has been able to chase 1,000. Ki Hashem elokechem hu hanilcham lachem kasher diber lachem, because God has been fighting for you. V'nishmartem od lenafshotechem, guard your souls carefully. La'avat Hashem elokechem, to love Hashem your God. Kim shov tashuvu udvaktem biyeter hagoyim eile hanisharim eile itchem, if you will turn away from God, interesting use of the word tshuva, to turn away from God, and cleave to these other nations that are here, that are still amongst you, recognizing that there are still Canaanites, vehitchatantem bahem uvatem bahem vehem bachem, and you will marry into them and they will marry into you. If you will begin to engage in marriages with these nations, hit chatantem, hit chatem, what? To marry, right? To engage, to enter into marriage contracts. Yado atedu. No, ki lo yosif Hashem alokechem lahorish etakoyim eile milifnechem, because God will not continue to expel these nations from before you. In other words, Yeshua recognizes at this point that they have done much, but they are not yet, they're not yet finished. There are still Canaanite enclaves all through the land of Israel. There are still many nations in their midst. That's how chapter 13 began as well. All the list of all the nations that are still around. I'll show you that in a moment. If you, in order to remove the rest of the nations of Canaan from your midst, you must continue to remain loyal to God. And if not, if you will start to socialize with them and engage in their respect of their deities and even enter into marriages with them, then the result will be that God will not finish the task for you. He will not expel these nations for you, and they will stay in your midst for generations to come. The result of which, of course, will be they will be for you snares and traps, and they will be thorns in your sides and bristles And av ad avodchem me'al ha'adama tova she'ezot asher natan lachem Hashem elokechem, until they will destroy you and expel you from this land.
Is this the basis for no dialogue with other, or some people
with the nations of Canaan?
No. In today's world.
In today's world, I try to be very careful not to draw direct analogies between what's taking place in Tanakh and modern political arenas, because to do that you have to work through all the issues and all the variables. To do it superficially is unfair, both to them and to us. But certainly with regards to the nations of Canaan, the Torah reiterates many times the prohibition against entering into contracts with them, into britot with them, or marrying them. Yeshua didn't make up these verses. They're taken directly from Chumash, and I'll show you where. He's simply reiterating that which Moshe told Bnei Yisrael before he died. Yeshua is telling Bnei Yisrael before he dies. V'hine anochi holech hayom b'derech kol ha'aretz. I am going the way of all the land, the way of the earth. No, with all your heart and with all your soul. Do you hear the biblical phrases? Kriyat Shema and other phrases. Ki lo nafal davar achad mikol hadvarim hatovim asher diber Hashem elokechem aleichem. Know that God has not abandoned one word of what He's promised you. Everything He's promised you, He has kept. Hakol ba'olecha. Everything has occurred. Lo nafal mimenu davar achad. Not one iota has been missed by God. Now that all the good that God has promised you has come, just as God brought all the good for you, brought you into the land, conquered the enemies, etc., if you abandon Him, if you abandon the covenant, if you do these things, then God is equally opposed to bring upon you all of the evil. Don't think it's only a one-way street. It's not just good. God can bring as much evil as He brought good. It depends on you. Bovrechem et brit Hashem elokechem shetzivatchem. If you will abandon, if you will cross, if you will violate the brit that God has made, and you will go and worship other gods and bow down to them, God will be angry at you and He will destroy you from the land. And you all hear the last sentence of the second paragraph of Kriyat Shema in this phrase. It's actually a combination of two verses in Kriyat Shema. The middle paragraph, v'charaf Hashem b'chem, v'adetem mehera me'al ha'aretz, etc., and the phrase, that's Yeshua's message to the Zikenim and Rashim and Shoftim and Shotrim, all of the elders, leaders, judges, magistrates who are responsible for the people. We're going to go back to this parak in detail in a moment. I want to read three psukim from the opening of Parak of Dalet. Vayesof Yeshua et kol shiftei Yisrael shchema. Yeshua gathers all the people of Israel together in Shechem. Vayikra lezikne Yisrael ulerashav ulushoftav ulushotrav vayityatzvu lifnei Elokim. He calls together the elders, the heads, the shoftim and the shotrim, which sounds exactly like He did in the beginning of Parak Chav Gimel. He's doing it again, except this time it's in Shechem. Where was the previous parak? Doesn't say. But I can assume where would the previous parak have taken place? No.
No, they're out of Gilgal.
Where are they?
No.
Where's the Mishkan?
Shiloh.
Shiloh, thank you. Shiloh. They're in Shiloh. They will stay in Shiloh for 300 and something years. They will stay in Shiloh throughout Sefer Shoftim and until the beginning of Sefer, and throughout, well, to the beginning of Sefer Shmuel. But I would assume that if Yeshua is gathering the elders together, He does so in Shiloh, which is where the Mishkan is. Perchav Dalet, He gathers them together in Shechem of all places. And it starts with almost the exact same phrase of the Zkenav, Rashav, Shoftav, and Shotrav. Here too, Vayikra le Zikne Yisrael ul Rashav ul Shoftav ul Shotrav. With one difference, And that is Perek Chaf Daled begins by Yosef Yeshua et Kol Shiftei Yisrael Shechem. There's a much more global reach to Yeshua's speech in Perek Chaf Daled. The Shvatim are not there in Perek Chaf Gimel. In Perek Chaf Gimel, Vayikra Yehoshua L'chol Yisrael Lizkenav Ulevashav. It says L'chol Yisrael, doesn't say Chol Shiftei Yisrael, it says L'chol Yisrael, but then it immediately moves into the Lizkenav Ulevashav, meaning that he didn't call all of Israel together, he called all of Israel via their representatives. Whereas here it says, at Kol Shiftei Yisrael, Vayikra Lizkenav Yisrael. He gathered all of the tribes, and then he called to the Zekinim. So, the implication is that in Perek Chaf Gimel, he's talking to a smaller group, specifically the leadership and representatives of every tribe. In Perek Chaf Daled, he gathers all the tribes of Israel together in a major public ceremony. And in that context, he also gathers the elders, but the elders to play a different role in that context. Namely, Vayasof Yeshua at Kol Shiftei Yisrael Shechema Vayikral Yikzikne Yisrael Lerashav Lushavtav Lushavtav Vayityatzvu Lifnei HaElokim Vayomer Yeshua El Kol Ha'am. If I had Pasuk Aleph and went from the first half of Pasuk Aleph straight to Pasuk Bet, V'yasof Yeshua et kol shivtei Yisrael shchema, v'yomer Yeshua el kol ha'am. Would it make sense?
Yeah.
Gathered all the people together and spoke to the people. In the interim, why does he call Ziknei Yisrael v'shav shavtav v'lushatav v'yityatzvu lifnei Elokim? What do the Zekinim, Shoftim, and Shotrim do in this context? What's the phrase the Torah the Navi uses? Vayit Yatzvu Lifnei HaElokim. They stood there. What do they stand there for?
Witness.
Witness or a support. In other words, Yeshua is not talking to the people by himself. He's talking to the people together with the entire leadership of Israel, all the Zekinim and the Shoftim and the Shoftim and the Shoftim, everybody standing there with Yeshua, so that the message that Yeshua conveys to the people is a message that's conveyed by Yeshua and all the people that he talked to in Perek Chaf Gimel. So there's a direct lead-in from Chaf Gimel to Chaf Daled. The same group of leadership that he addressed in Perek Chaf Gimel now stand with him to address part two of this speech, which is to the people as a whole. And part two, which is Perek Chaf Daled, has a very different tenor than part one does.
Well, one is speaking to leadership, one is speaking to people.
Absolutely. And it's clear from the content of the Perek that distinction is made.
Is Shechem more centrally located?
We're going to have to discuss the issue of why Shechem. Shechem is not more centrally located. Shechem is very problematic. Why Shechem of all places? This is not the first time he's gone to Shechem either. So actually, this the Mishkan is not in Shechem. Mishkan is in Shiloh. The place to go, right? The place to go would be Shiloh. Why take the people to Shechem if the Mishkan is now in Shiloh? Doesn't make a lot of sense, and we're going to have to address it. So we're going to divide this topic up essentially into two parts. First, I want to do a brief look at Perek Chaf Gimel in terms of the themes, the issues of what's going on here. And then we're going to expand our view and look through Perek Chaf Daled in more detail. So for now, I'm going to leave Perek Chaf Daled. We'll come back to it. I just wanted you to see the beginning, see the difference between what's happening, the fact that he's talking to a smaller group in Perek Chaf Gimel, a more representative group of the tribes, and therefore his message is a very sophisticated one. If you look at if you think about it from a content point of view,
the second message is more sophisticated?
No, the first.
The first,
Perek Chaf Gimel. It's a much more sophisticated message than we'll see in Perek Chaf Daled. Because he, first of all, his phraseology is all from Chumash. almost every verse. If we really want to do this exercise right, we would simply take out a concordancia and line by line look up every phrase. Ushmartem od nafshotechem. It has nothing to do with his speech, but that phrase is right out of Sefer Vayikra, which is the mitzvah of pikuach nefesh and v'chaim behem. The every line of this speech is taken from Sefer, from Chumash, primarily Sefer Dvarim, although other Svarim as well. And I don't think that's an accent, because I think the Zkenim, the Shotrim, the Shoftim, and the Shotrim are dafka, the group of people who they'd hear it. You know, they're the educated class. They're the ones who would be familiar with Chumash. They're the ones who would have access to what Torah says. The rest of the population never had direct access to the words of the Torah, not like today, where you pick up a Chumash and everybody knows what it says. In those days, you had how many scrolls did you have, and they were kept by the educated class. So the heads of the tribes, they would be familiar with these phrases. The rest of the people wouldn't. The most direct parallel to these verses here is, anybody? Adina, when you said this sounds like Sefer Dvarim, did you have any specific place in Sefer Dvarim in mind? We started the opening.
It sounded like Moshe.
Okay, fair enough. Start with. We're going to do this out of order. So we're going to do a little bit of jumping around. So leave Yeshua Perakov Gimel open. That's why I wanted a Chumash. Leave it open. And we're going to jump to a Chumash to. Slightly out of order. Let's start from the end. Tvarim. Beginning of Parashat Nitzavim. Beginning of Parshat Nitzavim.
29.
Page 1086. Atem Nitzavim Hayom Kulchem Lifnei Hashem Elokechem. You are all standing here today before God. Rashechem, Shiftechem, heads of your tribes. Ziknechem, Vishotrechem, your elders, your judge, your officers. Kol Ish Yisrael, every man of Israel. From the men and the women and the stranger in your midst and everybody together, to come into an oath with God and into a brit which God makes with you today. What does that sound like? Which part?
The second part.
Right. Parakov Dalet. Right,
Yatzfu
Lifnei Elokim. Exactly the same phrase. Vayit Yatzfu Lifnei Elokim. They stood before God. Atem Nitzavim. And the list of tribes, heads of tribes, Roshechem, Shiftechem, Ziknechem, Yishotrechem, and Kol Ish Yisrael. The beginning of Parakov Dalet is taken almost verbatim from the beginning of Parashat Nitzavim. That parallel park for now, we're going to come back to when we look at Parakov Dalet in detail. We're going to come back to that as well. Move forward a little bit. Perek Lamed Aleph. Beginning with Parashat Ve'elech. 1094. Moshe vayedaber et hadvarim ha'ela al kol Yisrael. Moshe spoke this to all of Israel. ויאמר עליהם, בן 120 שנה אנוכי היום, לא אוכל עוד לצאת ולבוא, והשם אמר אליי, לא תבוא את הירדן הזה. I am 120 years old, I am no longer able to go out and to battle with you, I am not going to cross over this Yarden, I am no longer going to be with you. From? Why? Okay, Yeshua doesn't give his age, but what does Yeshua say that Moshe also said? Well, essentially, what's the message here? What's his message? I'm about to die. I'm not going on with you, and therefore my message to you is one of what happens after me. What's Yeshua's message to the people? I am old. I am going to die, and therefore my message to you is what will happen to you and what you need to do after I'm gone. Now does it look familiar?
Well, they're both
it's very different.
They're different because Moshe knew.
It's almost like concepts, you know.
Moshe tells us his age. Okay.
I'm not going with you. You're going without me.
They're going on without him.
They're both putting it on the Jewish people. It's not them. It's the Jewish people.
Now it's the rest is up to them.
Right. You have to continue.
Now look what Moshe says to them. Hashem Elokecha hu over lefanecha hu yashmid et hagoyim ha'ele milefanecha vidishtam. God will go before you. God will fight your battles for you. Yoshua hu over lefanecha. Yoshua will be my successor. Vasa Hashem lahem kasher asa l'sichonu log melachay ha'mariha ula artzamesh v'yishmid otam. And God will do to the nations of Canaan what he did to Og and Sichon. U'netanam Hashem lifnechem v'asitem lahem et kol ha'mitzvah asher tziviti etchem. And God will give them into your hands. You will do all of the commandments. Chizku v'imtzu al tiru v'al tarzu. Don't be afraid. Be strong. Be courageous. Hashem Elokecha hu ha'olech imach. God goes with you. Lo yapecha v'lo yazveka. Don't be afraid. What did Yeshua say to them? Who fought their battles? God. Who did everything that he promised to do? God. Who was loyal to the Brit? God. What happens to come next? You now have the responsibility of continuing that loyalty to Hashem. Let's go back. We're going to work our way backwards.
Where are we going back to?
I'm going to go back to 1084. Beginning of Perek Chavtet. Vayikra Moshe al kol Yisrael vayomer alehem atem re'item et kol asher asa Hashem le'enechem be'eret Mitzrayim lefarao l'chol avadav l'chol arzo. You have seen all that God has done to Mitzrayim, to his paro and to his servants and to his land, the great wonders and miracles of Masot HaGdolot she'ra'u einecha otot v'hamoftim, and how I went with you for 40 days and through the desert, and you had no food, and I gave you food to eat and water to drink. Therefore you must keep the words of this brit and everything that I have commanded you. What's the message here? I skipped a few psukim in the middle, but essentially what's Moshe conveying to them? The foundation upon which they have to keep this brit going forward is?
It'd be harder to keep.
Unless they succeed in the first. No.
Right, but the he begins, why does he go back to Mitzrayim? Why does he start with this expression, Atem re'item et kol asher asa Hashem le'nechem be'eretz Mitzrayim? You have seen all that God has done for you in Mitzrayim, therefore. What's the therefore? Use the experience that you had in Mitzrayim, draw upon it to recognize all that God can do for you if you remain loyal. Correct? How does Perek Chaf Gimel of Yehoshua begin? Pasuk Gimel. Va'atem re'item et kol asher asa Hashem elokechem lechol hagoyim ha'ele mipnechem. In other words, he does exactly what Moshe did. He used the experience of what they saw through the conquest of Canaan as the foundation, and says to them, build on it. You saw what God can do for you. You saw the success we had. Know what can be achieved if you remain loyal. Therefore, as the time moves forward, use that. Understand that that is the paradigm from which you may draw. It's almost a verbatim paraphrase of this verse in the beginning of Perek Chavtet with one shift. Moshe spoke about the paradigm of Yetziat Mitzrayim. Yehoshua spoke about the paradigm of the conquest of Canaan. But the structure and the message, I think, is very similar. Now let's go back even further. When he talks to them about the brit that they have to be loyal to, and they can't violate that brit, what would constitute violating that brit in Yeshua's description?
Intermarrying,
engaging with,
socializing,
engaging with the nations of Canaan, or the idol-worshipping nations of Canaan, pagans. Turn to Devarim Perek Zion, page 976. When you will come into the land that God will give you as an inheritance, God will remove from before you, thrust away many nations, great nations, seven nations greater and stronger than you. That, by the way, that phrase also appears in this parak. I'm not going to find it as quickly because I forgot to write it down. But that also, pasuk tet, vayoresh Hashem mipnechem goyim gdolim va'atzumim. God has given you as an inheritance nations strong, great and strong. Back to Dvarim. Unetanam Hashem alakecha lefanecha vikitam. God has given them into your hands. You will smite them. Hacharem tacharim otam. You must utterly destroy them. Lo tichrot lehem brit v'lo tachanem. Do not marry them. Do not conduct a covenant with them, nor show them favor. V'lo titchaten bam. Nor marry into them. Bitcha lo titen livno, uvito lo tikach livnecha. Their daughters don't take for your sons. Do not give your sons to their daughters. Their daughters. Ki asiret bincha mi'acharai, because they will take your sons away from me. V'avdu alehim acharim, and they will worship other gods. V'chara af Hashem b'chem, God will be angry at you. V'ishmitcha maher, and He will destroy you quickly. Chara af Hashem, the marriage, the phraseology here is very. The notion of don't marry into them and don't bring them to you. Uvatem bahem, v'itchatantem bahem, uvatem bahem, behem bahem. Back and forth. Right. The phraseology is very specific. It's very parallel. The draw that Yeshua uses from Sefer Devarim and from the mitzvot of Sefer Devarim is very compelling. And he only does this in Perichav Gimel. Perichav Dal is much more subtle. But I think that's not an accident. He's talking to a group of people who, in many of them, actually stood at Moshe's speech. We're how many years later are we talking about? 20 years later? 25 years later? These elders could very well have heard Moshe's speech to them. Absolutely. They're educated, they hear, they understand, and they were there. And Yeshua draws on that for this message. The second message that Yeshua conveys, what will be the consequence if you do violate this brit? The enemy won't leave, and the result will be. This is a very powerful imagery. From contemporary times? Okay.
Do you work for the student?
No, I don't.
So, since we've lived here, I do the student advisory. Yeah. I did a group last week. The first time, there was a group of four young Jewish kids speaking to a Catholic girl school. Out of the four, one Orthodox, one conservative, aside from the Orthodox, all three said, we have Christmas trees. We don't believe. My grandmother likes it. My father likes it. We this, we that. Where have we gone? Look.
Absolutely. I don't know an answer to that question, but they obviously
don't.
There's no answer.
Haven't you been told this many times? Christmas isn't a religious holiday. It's a national holiday.
My point is, forget what the message is that goes to this.
I hope your thing's off.
No, it's not actually. It's the tape is rolling.
Okay. You said it.
I mean,
100%.
Listen, this time
no,
of year.
No, but my point was, this is the first time in the 7 years that I've heard three out of the four. I think two out of the four came from mixed marriages.
Your analogy is 100% correct. If in our context the analogy is a cultural one, multiply that tenfold when the cultural assimilation carries with it security and national implications. Multiply that cultural assimilation. Imagine for you for a moment what it would be like were Israel as a nation state in the Middle East to have neighbors who would be as open and as friendly and as cross-culturally inclined as we have in America. Understand the security challenge that that would create for the state of Israel.
Far greater.
Far greater. So for us, it's a personal tragedy on the level of those individuals and those families and the community as a whole. In Israel, it becomes not only the personal tragedy, and it is, does happen, although much less often than it happens in America, but it gets multiplied and complicated by the security and national implications. And that's precisely what Yeshua is addressing when he says, if you start to socialize with them and you start to marry into them and you start to connect with them because you want to belong to this great nation of nations, then what the result of which will be that you undermine your own security. And that's precisely what... Sorry, what did you say?
You're connecting with them in this country because of where we are. I mean, you are connecting with them. You can't say we aren't. I mean, it's in the stores, it's in the air, it's on the TV, it's everywhere. I mean, it's not like you can't connect.
Right.
The only thing you can do is put on a mask.
In so now transform that kind of open... transform that kind of cross-cultural openness into the Middle East and put Israel into a context where would she have that kind of open cross-cultural borders with nations that are essentially national threats to us, and suddenly the entire story is complicated. And that's exactly what Yeshua addresses, and his phraseology is taken directly from Chumash. Take a look at page 922. I need a French translator. I need French subtitles.
Rabbi, just a little translation.
It'll be clear once I read the verses. And then I'll come back to if it's not clear. Let's just read the psukim and then it'll become clear. In page 922, let's go to the bottom of page 920. From Pasuk Nun. Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe. This is again the end of Bamidbar, but it's essentially the same context. Vayedaber Hashem el Moshe ba'arvot Moav al yaden yerecho lemor. Speak to Bnei Israel, say to them, Ki atem ovrim et yarden al Eretz Kanaan. You now cross over the Yarden into Eretz Kanaan. Top of page 922, Pasuk Nun Bet. V'harashtem et kol yeshvei ha'aretz mipnechem. You shall remove or drive out the inhabitants from the land. V'ibadtem et maskiyotam. You will destroy their places where they bow down. V'et kol tzalmei masichotam ta'abedu. Destroy their graven images, that kol bamotam tashmidu, destroy their temples, v'harashtem et ha'aretz, and do possess the land, v'shavtem ba, dwell therein, ki lachem netati et ha'aretz l'reshtotah, I have given this land to you to possess, v'itnachaltem et ha'aretz b'goral l'mishpachotehem, divide the land by lots according to your families, more land to the families that have more people, less land to the tribes that have less people. Pasuk nun hei. If you will not remove the local nations from before you, those that will remain will be lesikim be'enechem ulitzninim betzidechem. They will become pins in your eyes and thorns in your sides. V'tzarru etchem al ha'aretz asher atem yoshvim ba. They will harass you, they will give you trouble in the land which you dwell. That which I had said I would do to them, I will as punishment do to you. In other words, the challenge that remains for Yeshua is that you have all of these Canaanite strongholds remaining. You have not only enemies around you, Ammon, Moab, Edom, but you have local Canaanite nations in your midst. Yeshua is keenly aware of the fact that the job hasn't yet been completed. We haven't finished. settling the entire region. There are areas where there are Canaanites, and the Canaanites carry with them a culture and a society and an idolatry. And if you allow the cross-cultural connection, if you allow the meals together and the food together and the breaking bread together and the drinking together and the marriages together, the result of which will be that they will become, as the Torah says, thorns in your side, meaning there'll be a security risk for you. And that's precisely the phrase that Yeshua uses in Perek Chof Gimel as well.
Security risk in the sense that, I mean, I would think it would be insecurity-wise, they would merge, they wouldn't have any identity anymore, but they would be more secure.
Well, they'd actually become less secure. Why? The rational thinking is what you were suggesting. They become more secure. We're friendly terms with all our neighbors. We will become more secure. That's the great vision that Shimon Peres Luke writes in his book.
Right?
That's Shimon Peres' famous vision in his book, where he writes that his dream for the Middle East is when Israel sits at the table as a member of the Arab League. Mm-hmm. That's the great vision of a Middle East without borders. But the price you pay for it is...
You become complacent.
Well, more than complacent, you disappear.
Right.
You disappear. So what's the role of the Brit between God and Israel? So God's response to that is, you will undermine your own security. Why? Kasher astimiti lasot lahem e'eselachem. Because that which I told them I will do to them, I will do to you. I will be angry with you and I will destroy you. Sefer Shoftim, which we're going to get to, this is all an introduction to Sefer Shoftim. Because Sefer Shoftim is an entire book of 350 years of history tracing this pattern. That every time we got too close or too culturally connected, too spiritually assimilated, the result was some enemy that came upon us, some security risk that threatened us, and the required process to remove the physical threat was to return spiritual. It may be rationally that we think we would be more secure, but we would undermine our own raison d'etre. We would have no reason to exist.
But that's not really a security.
It is when you look at it from a biblical vantage point.
But security, you're not on that. Religious security, you're talking about physical security. It would not be a
and why
security.
Would you dream of separating them? What possible motive would you have to separate religious security and physical security when the entire foundation of Torah and the entire foundation of Nach and the fundamental axiom of all of Tanakh is that they are inherently interconnected? That's the message. You want to summarize Tanakh in one sentence? That's the message. Your physical security is interconnected with your spiritual loyalty. In one sentence, that's Tanakh.
Yes, but
if you can't buy that, then that's exactly what Moshe and Yeshua is saying. Then there's a flaw somewhere, and there's a disconnect in the concept of the Emunah, that's what the Brit is all about. You can stay, we say, in Kriyat Shema. You can stay in your land as long as you are loyal to God. That's what Kriyat Shema is all about. That's why reward and punishment in the Torah, every time there's a mention of any kind of reward in the Torah, it's always about the land. There's a direct connection between spiritual well-being, loyalty to the Brit, and the physical national security in the land.
So it's a real conflict.
So that's the basis for living and staying in Israel?
No. But that's the notion that our right to remain there is only as long as we are loyal to God. And that's certainly a Tanakh message. We do ourselves...
So the problem is to be very strong among the people, but not to be physically apart. If we are very strong in our faith,
we can live with other people without dissolving.
That's correct. And you weren't here last year, but we talked, I don't remember if it was last year or the year before, we talked about the one condition upon which the Torah says we could allow the nations of Canaan to remain. Mm-hmm. And that is? What's the one prerequisite to allow the Canaanites to remain?
They have their own leadership.
What was the primary condition?
They didn't have their idolatry.
Right. They had to remove the idolatry. They had to create an idolatry-free zone. They had to accept the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach, in another terminology. Because once they do that, then their cultural affiliation is not a threat to us. Then their spiritual being is not a threat to us. Then there's no threat of assimilation. The foundation is the same. That's the concept of a ger toshav. And that's permissible. There's a debate whether or not you can make a ger toshav out of the Canaanites, but the Rambam paskens we can. And that's what it's all about. Okay, so we will conclude today with a summary of what Tanakh is all about.